Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Tragedy and Hope. It's been a long time. It seems like forever since I had Richard Grove back on the show. But Rich has been pretty busy, not just working, but Rich is also a new dad of a beautiful little boy named Lucas. I sent that out to my listeners, of course, when it happened, and Rich gave me the information. So I have to say good morning to the new dad and mom. Hi, Rich.
Good morning, Maria. Thank you.
No, thank you. How exciting.
It's the most exciting thing I've ever had happen.
I know. How does it feel when you look at your little clone? I'm sure he's a little clone of you and Lisa. What goes through your head?
Well, he looks like me, people say, but he has her blue eyes.
Well, she's beautiful.
It's pure joy. It's pure joy.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. I know, you know, it was a little rough at the beginning, but how's the baby doing now?
He is doing so well. He is thriving. He's getting heavy. I think he's like 17 pounds now. He's 4 months old. He's in 12-month clothing. So, you know, as far as babies go, he's exceeded all of our expectations so far.
All right. Well, now you have yet another reason to continue doing the work you do.
Well, and it's, you know, this. I just finished a podcast a couple days ago, right before Memorial Day weekend, and it was the first one I've done since he's been born. Right before he was born, I finished a podcast, published it, and we went straight to the hospital within 20 minutes after that. So I had taken the first couple months to really make sure that he's getting all the good, thriving attention that he needs. And so I was doing the podcast the other day, and I thought, oh, wow, this is the first one that he's going to hear that he's actually here in the house when I'm recording it. And it's even more important now. I feel like I've laid out a lot of good groundwork in the past 10 years for him to go through and actually learn what's going on in this world in such a way that he's not going to have to spend years at college and indenture himself into a system that's not his friend. He's going to know from a very young age how freedom works, how freedom needs certain things to exist, and how those things that it needs to exist, those common ingredients of freedom, if you will, are being dissolved and destroyed. And I would like him to grow up with at least as much freedom as I enjoyed when I was a kid, or my dad or his dad had when they were kids. And we're living in a world where more and more individual freedoms being eroded. And you can't have despotism or tyranny without collectivism. And the key to collectivism is eroding the rights of the individual upon which everything else on this planet is basically built. Government is supposed to be built in a reflection of there's a bunch of individuals and they need some structure to get along with each other. But it should never forget about the individual, because it's the individual building block of all these structures and things that we see in our world today.
Absolutely. Well, I know you know that free speech, of course, the First Amendment, is very important. And yet we look around the country where everybody seems to be afraid to say anything based on political correctness.
I thought we had gone through this political correctness thing like back in the late 90s. Didn't Bill Maher have like Politically Incorrect, his show, to be like, hey, political correctness, let's just keep it real and stop changing the words we use, because the words we use are a reflection of how we think. And if everyone starts putting on fake words, then they're having fake conversations, and they're skipping over the very essential elements of individual liberty in order to have these meaningless conversations about things that would never happen in a world where individual liberty was widely recognized by governments and other ruling structures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real you know, change in direction from where we were as a country, let's say in 1776 through the first, you know, American Revolution. Through the War of 1812, we were pretty much, you know, of the mindset that we needed to be self-reliant, to have real self-esteem, and to get along in this world and to find and pursue happiness, to pursue and attain a happiness, in fact. And you can do that through having a good work ethic, but not in a world where everything's based on corruption, not where everything's, you know, tilted, the tables are tilted, where a very few elite are going to run this country just like the very few elite ran Britain back in the day. So I think people all over the planet are at a point where it's time to wake up and start realizing that individual liberty being lost for anyone, anywhere on the planet, is a threat to everyone, everywhere on the planet. And I just see through history that the British Empire never had its revolution for individual liberty. It never had its constitution or Bill of Rights. And that system remains today and is slowly, over the past couple hundred years, change the attitudes, values, behaviors, and beliefs of American citizens to be very much like the people who were ruled by the British Empire historically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, when you talk about, you know, First Amendment and you look at this election and what's going on with this election, the only area of hope that I see are the huge crowds coming out for Bernie Sanders. You know, Bernie's actually talked about a lot of these issues. And I think a lot of thinking Americans are in agreement. You know, Americans are very angry. It's almost as if they're first waking up to the fact that our elections are being stolen. And how many years have you and I been talking about stolen elections?
Well, I think the stolen elections are the symptom, and the root cause is even the people, if in a fair election, even the people who you elect fairly in this country don't end up really representing you or understanding how what your interests are or how you'd like things to go. So even in a place where someone from your state, a senator or congressman, is an honest person, they get elected and good for them, they're working within a corrupt system and they don't have a majority, and the minority that they are, they don't stand up for anything because they know that someone else is going to put money into their district and they're going to lose their cushy seat. I think the seats need to be a lot less cushy. I think they need to get a lot less benefits. And then the people who are interested in actually going there might actually be interested in representing individuals. But until that happens, I'm kind of where I've been for the past 10 years. I haven't voted in the presidential election or any election in the past decade because I've seen that there's no cause and effect connection between my vote and what those part, like what the ruling class is actually doing. They, in fact, have a plan. They continue to execute their plan and put, you know, propaganda characters out there to, you know, play opposing sides in that plan, and they always get the synthesis they desire unless people start to think for themselves and say, wait a minute, am I participating in a system that is, you know, degrading my rights? Because there's a lot of things that people in power, so-called power, do that individuals like you and I don't have the right to do. And I think my problem with that system is that there are so many made-up rights and made-up laws to make certain people, you know, more equal than others, that that's where things get out of hand. That's where the black market funding of intelligence and all these other things come together in those powers beyond what individuals ourselves have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see that you've come out with a little line of free speech, First Amendment T-shirts. How's that doing, and how can people get one of those T-shirts?
Well, you can get the T-shirts. That's a website called Teespring, TeeSpring.com/tragedyandhope. So that's where different designs that Greg and I, Greg Hardesty is my designer. I come up with concepts. So basically, I send him a series of words, and he makes them into pictures. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's the sixth or seventh. I don't keep track of the T-shirts too closely. I just know that I like to wear the designs that I've made. I find them good for, you know, stimulating conversations with other people and getting people to think outside the box where normally if you just had a plain T-shirt, they're not. So I find them useful. I wear them all the time, and I just figured if anyone else wants one, they can get one. But it's not something I really push or sell. So the First Amendment one, I just had that idea. I was, you know, eating, and I was thinking about what was going on in the world, and I wrote, like, I made it like a baseball, old-time baseball jersey, and I wrote it down on a note card, and then I sent that that image, if you will, through words to Greg, and he sent me back this snazzy design. And I said I wanted the text of the First Amendment in the number one on the back of the shirt. And I think he did a great job.
I think so, too. I was checking them out this morning, and I think T-shirts are a very good way to start conversations with people. You're like a little human billboard walking around.
Yeah, it's better than buying something. You know, I see what they have it. You know, if I go to Target once or twice a year, you know, with my wife, she needs something there. I'm walking around seeing what they're selling people, and it's like they're rehashing designs from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, just throwing them on T-shirts, and it's completely hollow and meaningless, especially since the artists that are being featured on there are dead, and they're really not getting any money. You know what I'm saying? It's like a collection of dead artist T-shirts that they got at those places. It's like, hey, support an artist while he's alive.
Right. You know how many times I say that? I think about Dave McGowan, and since he's crossed over, you know, all of a sudden everybody's got, you know, fan pages for him, this, that, the other thing. Everybody's like first discovering his work. And I just look at them and I post all the time the same thing. You know, Dave died pretty much broke.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't want you to worship us after we're dead. We want you to help us, support us while we're alive. That's what's important. And I mean, that was a great loss for the world. And you look at that and, you know, it's kind of sad in a way, but of course Dave did what he came here to do. But I mean, he worked tirelessly, just like you, okay? And I was just telling the story yesterday of how you and I met. And, you know, the whole 9/11 truth movement at the time, and how everybody had ignored the work you had sent them, you know, way back when. What was that, the 9/11 synchronicity we did?
Yeah.
No respect. But then all of a sudden, because my servers were like on fire for 2 weeks, everybody wanted to know about Richard Grove. But then, you know, where were they to really support you and your work?
Well, I take self-responsibility at this point. It's not someone else's responsibility to recognize the facts and try to put it out there. That's why I grew over the past 10 years to learn how to do the different things that are necessary as far as experience and education and knowledge to produce media in its various forms. You know, to learn how to use cameras and microphones and all the other things that I've used in my art over the years. So I take it back to, you know, 10 years ago. You publishing that Project Constellation MP3 inspired me to say, you know what? Okay, am I going to expect someone else to help me out all the time? Or am I going to just start, you know, going down this road? That's how you got there. You know, instead of telling somebody else, hey, you should interview this person, you started interviewing people on your own. And so I don't think if you had taken the time that, I mean, I was writing, you know, blogs and articles, but it was after people heard me on your show that people, you know, they're like, we want more. And what other research, what else have you found? What are you finding out now? How do you keep us updated? All this sort of stuff. And I was like, wow, I'm not the only person who's interested in answering these questions. And as I learn to answer them for myself, I can make art and media that inspires people to go on their own journey. And everyone's journey is going to be different. Not everyone's going to be making podcasts and videos. But you might be doing local presentations for people in your town or your church or what other groups are around, because the things we're talking about, the things I've studied and published on in the past 10 years, affect 7 billion people on this planet, whether or not they know it yet.
So. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, listen, 10 years ago, let's go back 11 years, you were living the American dream, according to the definition. But now I wanted to ask you, 11 years later, is your life better now or was it better then?
Oh, it's way better now, but technical correction, it was like 13 years ago, because I think I left New York City in September of 2003, and from there it was, you know, kind of a downward struggle until you learn, it's like, wait, you're trying to be an honest person in a system that's based on corruption, and the frauds that I was reporting, they don't want people to know about because that's how they make their money. And so really it was, you know, my career went downward as corporatism goes. But my intellect and my learning and my thirst for understanding this world went through the roof. And I wouldn't change a thing. It was definitely an unplanned, unscheduled kind of you're off the beaten path and people were like, what are you doing over there? But if you're after something, you know, that's factual and truthful, you're going to have to go off the beaten path, because what everyone else is being spoon-fed by the media and education is a myth. It's a children's story. And the reality is so much more interesting, but it takes a lot more time to learn it because it's actually got a lot more detail than the simplified stories we're told to control us. And then, you know, to produce something on that, it's just another layer of the challenge. Can I learn about it? And then can I organize and compose something that other people can learn from now and decades in the future?
Well, and nobody can say you haven't done a great job, Rich. I don't know anybody that has the body of work that you have done.
I think, well, your body of work is very impressive. I know James Corbett's body of work is very impressive. There's even other people out there like Alex Jones. Like, some of his body of work was impressive at one point. I don't necessarily, you know, agree with a lot of his opinions, but I do think that none of us can do this alone, and that the more of us that do this, as far as finding these little known facts that are relevant and pertinent to what's going on today, and sharing them in any way we can, anywhere from, you know, using Facebook or Twitter, all the way up to creating your own show, all the way up to your show being so big that you've got satellites and $30 million a year coming through there. Like, I can't even cognize that type of operation or success level or whatever. I'm just trying to keep the lights on, and so are you, and so was Dave McGowan, and so are so many other people that are doing consistent, great work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I got to tell you, there's not a day I don't miss Dave McGowan, that's for sure. especially with the crazy stories in the news every day, because I'd love to hear his opinions on it.
Well, I think
when we talked a little earlier about elections, you know, I got to agree with you. I was just talking to one of my friends, and she's my age, and I said, look, truthfully, I don't recall any time in my entire life, and I'm a senior now, that any presidential election has changed my life for the better. I mean, it really hasn't. It hasn't changed my life for the better, although I did manage to get in on Obama's refinance plan. So that did help me out to the tune of about $400 a month. But that was about it. And I think Obama was a huge disappointment to most black people in America.
I'm just thinking about the whole notion of, you know, they fleece hundreds of millions of people for tax dollars. And then the biggest corporations and the richest people don't even have to pay into that. And so they have all this money, not only from taxpayer dollars, but from investments that the United States has made with the resources owned by the United States federal government, all these different things. And then they run what they do so inefficiently. Like, none of us would ever run a business like that. But they're like, yeah, just spend all this money because there's more coming in. So I think that there's a basic problem with giving a whole bunch of money to a group of people with questionable motives and a long, long track record of doing things that are treason. That's what the last episode I made of Peace Revolution is called, the National Security Coup. It's a whole bunch of instances of treason and how if you don't fight back against it, it's just going to continue. And it continues from one presidential administration into the next, and they keep more and more secrets. And when most of the information that's kept secret is, you know, it's not making it to the public until 15 years or 75 years, depending on which security policies they're using, that means people don't know what's going on. And that's control. When you're being held in the situation by people lying to you and they won't tell you what's going on, that's control, that's slavery, that's tyranny, that's despotism. And I just don't see, you know, how one of these presidents, any of them, are going to lead to anything but more of that downward spiral.
Well, I have to agree. I mean, I have said for so many years now, I bore myself when I say it, you know, it's like, or maybe I can use it the way David Icke said it really well on the show the last time he was on. No matter who you vote for, the government still gets in. And I've said for years, you know, this government needs an enema from top to bottom. I mean, I think it's unfixable. I think we need to start over.
Well, starting, I mean, we're born into a system that's ongoing, and starting over with the clean slate is pretty hard because that opens you up to just being taken over in the forms of communism, as you've seen. When the free market goes down, when individual rights go down, then communism just swoops in and takes over government historically. And it's just another hand used by the bankers, because the people who funded all those projects of communism are the same people that control our Federal Reserve and the presidents that were offered. And the media networks that bring them to us.
Right. So then what do you think is the solution? I mean, I know you and I have worked on some of the solution all these years because we're educating people. But once the people get educated, do you think it'll just be like mass consciousness spreads and everybody says enough?
I think enough people need to know such that people have the confidence that they're not cowering with this knowledge, but they're freely speaking it because it's becoming public knowledge. It's becoming public knowledge. The more people that know about it, the easier it is for anyone to be like, hey, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. Because you know a bunch of other people are going to be like, yeah, I can see that. I'm totally not fooled. Yeah, we were fooled, you know. And so what I try to show through the different productions that I release is that if you take time to research any of these topics, it's a lot different than what we were told. And you do that by structurally, like you structure it such that you're searching YouTube for a certain topic instead of just watching the latest cat video or chasing yarn or whatever's popular. It's like all these things that are being used to dumb people down could also be used to really smarten you up. And a lot of people have caught on that anything you want to learn, you can just YouTube it. And oh, there it is. Oh, you need to, you know, fix your car, fix your furnace, whatever needs fixing, go and learn it for yourself. And then you start to realize, well, I don't need a teacher to tell me what to study. But it is cool to bump into some media that's like, oh, that inspires me to some, you know, study some stuff on my own. And that's what I try to do. I'm not saying that anything I'm presenting is the end all be all story. I'm saying if you want a great solid starting point into this subject, here's a bunch of hours on Iran-Contra, or, you know, how the British took over American intelligence, or how the school system was undermined by this same group. And you start to notice through listening to different productions that it's a finite planet. There's only so many people here. And the different organizations that are taking action against us have been working in concert because they have a plan and they have funding. And thus far, they've been going about it without a whole lot of resistance. But resistance builds up when people know enough to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, Hillary Clinton covered up a bunch of sex crimes for her husband. She was involved with the cocaine and the arms trafficking and all the other stuff that went on in Arkansas while her husband was governor and she was working in a Rose law firm. And then you start to look into, you know, the death of Vince Foster or, you know, maybe her affair with other people in that office that became famous. And then you start to see that she's just a cog in a machine. And that machine, the Clinton machine, runs on the same cocaine and heroin trade that the Bush machine runs off of. And then you see you've got basically a choice between candidates traditionally in the last 40 years, where it's like the right leg or the left leg of the people that control the black market. The body is the same. They create prohibitions to control the black market. And just look at the largest arms producers in the world. No wonder we can't have world peace.
Absolutely, and we've got to admit the United States sells more arms to other countries than anybody. And that was, I think, that was the whole purpose of Obama's visit to Vietnam. Because as soon as he left Vietnam, he's like, okay, we're gonna start selling arms again. I always think about that movie with Nicolas Cage. I think it was Lords of War. I mean, that's very clearly what happens in this country.
Well, remember, while he's a young upstart in Long Island or wherever, he always encounters that guy in the Rolls Royce, the British guy. So what we have, I mean, it's not, America is just not guilty by itself. It's like, it's the Anglo-American establishment. It's been together for 115 years at this point. They've got a plan, they got funding, and they've been concocting and controlling and manipulating most of the large historical events that have happened during that time. So it's not something that we can solve just here in America, because America has become so entwined with the great commonwealth of the empire known as Britain. And it's not the people in Britain. It's not the people of the British Empire. They're held, subject to the king and queen, just like we're held subject to a rogue government right now. So I think we all as individuals have the same problem, no matter what country you're in on this planet. Because if you're not in America or part of the British Empire, you're in some place that has been controlled by the Anglo-American establishment because of the minerals and precious metals and things that are in that country. And so when you see the UN or any of these other, IMF, World Bank working with these countries, they do not care about those people. They don't even care about people who look like them and talk the same language. They're sure not going to care about people whose cultures they don't relate to, but they claim this. This is the whole guise of them using charity to help all these countries in Africa, when really look at the strategic metals and minerals being, raped and plundered and pillaged out of those countries, and you'll see the real reason why those wars are being waged or why troops are being sent there. I think on any given day, American troops are engaged in like 78 countries around the world.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the BRICS nation, you look at Venezuela today, you look at Brazil and the coup they just had in Brazil, and our fingerprints are all over it. They tried to pull away from the IMF, and when they started their own BRICS bank, I knew it was just a matter of time, because they would never allow that. I mean, what's your views on that?
Well, I think what you're seeing is an experiment, a slow-moving experiment that's about to go into action, because you've got the situation you just mentioned, while simultaneous you've got this artificially engineered Zika virus. And by the way, the people in Zika in Africa don't show the same symptoms as what you're seeing over there. So I see there's like a bio-warfare experiment. And then on top of that, they're going to host the Olympics, right? So you got people coming from all over the world. Now they're setting up some sort of 12 monkeys scenario where those people get infected and they get on the planes and go back. It's like, that's... stop that. Let's just ask some questions. It's like,
right, exactly. Where's
the paperwork on the Zika virus? Who discovered it? Where's the patent? What pharmaceutical company has been experimenting with it? These are the things that investigative journalists on the mass media should have been asking, but that's why you and I do what we do, Maria, because they're not. So it's like, somebody should.
Mainstream media is 24/7 this election. I'm sick of it. And when I post things, real news on social media, people go into shock. They say, how come I never heard this? And I said, because you're listening to mainstream media. They're not going to tell you about this. They work for the same people.
They're like, I just got a little bit of signal. Why haven't I heard that? Because you're listening to the noise. And you don't know it's noise until you're getting a little signal from Maria or someone else that, you know, is out there doing their own work and trying to help other people see what's going on. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't just happen without anyone doing any looking.
Right.
They're not just going to leak out. Like, they're back in the day, Alexander the Great had a tutor named, I think it was Aristotle. And Alexander the Great sends Aristotle this letter, and he's like, hey, dude. He didn't say dude, but he's like, hey, guy, why are you teaching the slaves the method by which we rule them as masters? You know, that's undermining my ability to control people. And so that's what it really gets back to today with the media. Why would they educate the audience when they treat the audience like idiots? So the corporate mass media and all those pharmaceutical companies and war profiteers that fund that stuff, they think their audience are idiots. They like it that way. They're not going to try to make you smarter. There's no benefit in it for them because you're going to recognize the ruse. So,
absolutely. Well, that's why a lot of people are walking away from mainstream media.
Yeah, apparently only 6% of people trust it. No 6% were sleeping at the time.
Exactly. But I did want to go back to YouTube and social media. That's a problem for them that they weren't prepared for, we'll call it that way. Because what's happening now, as I understand, YouTube has surpassed Google as a search engine. More people go to YouTube now than they do to Google. Facebook is now trying to scratch their head because people are not posting pictures of their dinners or their cats anymore. People are posting news stories. So it's almost like once the cat's out of the bag, the same methods that they've tried to control us, people are flipping it against them and using it for news now.
And I think,
of course, that's sitting well with Facebook at this particular time.
Well, and I think it's important for people to flip it while you can, because they're coming up with newer and better ways to control you that you're not going to be able to opt out of so easily. But if we show that the Facebook model of you as the product, and they make a bunch of money, and then they want to censor your perspectives to keep everything, you know, so that, you know, a billionaire little, you know, a Zuckerberg dude who didn't really create anything on his own can have the epitome of free speech while denying everyone who's being used as a product or an idiot in their network to be denied it. It's like, not everybody. I'm sure some people can, you know, agree with the propaganda. But I think that once free speech goes, everything else goes real quick. So if nothing else, we should at least defend each other's rights to speak freely. And not say, oh, that person said something that made me feel unsafe, or he hurt my feelings. It's like, no, that's not real. Microaggression, from what I've seen, doesn't hold water. Aggression actually does. There's a physical determination that you were touched or punched or hit or whatever, and that shouldn't be done in a civilized society. But in a society where you allow words to hurt you, I think that immaturity is being seeded into the population because the controllers want to extend adolescence and prevent people from actually thinking like adults who could actually – it'd be like if you had a prison and you want to keep all the prisoners at a level of, you know, elementary school, and they can't possibly learn their way out to challenge the authority of that prison or to escape or whatever. So, you know. I can make a lot of metaphors.
You look at you know, Trump and all his inflammatory statements, and to me, I just see it as, you know, getting people all excited in the old divide and rule game, where, you know, Americans are turning on each other based on somebody who talks like a five-year-old, anger or whatever he comes out with. But it's kind of scary to see how many people get behind that, like this new crazy bathroom laws. You know, I'm looking at this and I'm like, has this country gone totally insane?
They're pushing it.
Well, they are. And I mean, they, you know, many years ago, you might even remember, Richard, when they came out with all these smoking bans. I told people every law passed is a freedom law. Sooner or later, they're going to tell you how and when you can have sex. And people thought that I was crazy. Well, I posted something the other day, and I think I have it for my news show tomorrow. Thursday. About certain states where now they want only people to have sex if they intend to procreate. Okay? So people just don't understand. Anybody that loses their rights, it's going to eventually come around to you. It's going to be whether what size soda you can drink, whether you're too fat to be served in a restaurant, which, you know, they do in Mississippi, and now it's, you know, what bathroom you can go to. How can people see this as freedom and democracy and celebrate Memorial Day and not understand even the truth about Memorial Day, which is, was another hoax pulled on us? You know, nobody connects it to the slaves and where it started. You know, everything is about our veterans. But that wasn't really the original story of Memorial Day, but that was erased because black history doesn't matter in America.
Well, going back to what you said about the Brave New World type of complex where the state doesn't want parents to exist because parents get in the way of the state programming individuals and they don't want people to resist. So it's a lack of the literature's there. Like there are books and the history or the fiction and nonfiction, it's all there if people look for it, but they're not going to look for it while they're watching, you know, Ow, My Balls or whatever other reality show they got on these days that is completely hollow, superficial, trivial, does not pertain to you, your life, your survival, your happiness, any of this. And yet people are just dumping all their time in there because they don't know a better way. And I just think that we're going to continue to be assailed by all these ideas of dystopia in a package of utopia until people were smart enough to actually look at the box, open the box, and call a spade, or bullshit, bullshit, whatever you want to say, because it's hypocrisy gone wild. I mean, they say one thing, they do the other, and it's all okay with everybody, and it's like, wait a minute, no wonder we're losing all the things that make freedom freedom. The recognition that individuals do have equal rights and that my rights end where your rights begin. And if I'm not infringing on your rights, then you have no right to tell me what to do. Because to tell me what to do in that context says you're my master and I'm a slave and I don't believe in slavery. I'm a 21st century abolitionist. And I think everyone should be against slavery. And when you start to look at freedom and slavery through that lens, you see, oh, there's a lot of hypocrisy going on. By voting for the president, I'm actually voting to put certain people in cages who I've never met and who have never done anything to me. And I'm giving that government the right to build those prisons and keep those people in cages. I don't want anything to do with that. You know? So I think today's a function of people take too many actions with consequences they don't understand, and they're not really interested in learning about that process at all. So it's going to continue until people bump into some media to make them think for themselves.
Absolutely. Well, I think this is the first election ever in the United States where people heard the word superdelegates and started understanding what I knew in high school was that our votes don't matter.
Yeah, superdelegates. I mean,
like Superman.
I have no idea what a superdelegate or a super PAC or any of these other things that they make up are, because to like go educate myself in that area would be to participate in an intellectually dishonest myth, which would be that whole political system. You know?
Exactly. Well, superdelegates are basically, the way I figured it out after a little investigation, they're lobbyists. So that's the difference. They're lobbyists. They're paid whores for the system. And when it comes to political correctness, I can tell you, Richard, I'm sure you know because you've known me so long, I don't worry about political correctness with the words coming out of my mouth, and I don't really care who doesn't like it. Okay? It's just the way it is. Words are words. Anyway, let's take a short break, Rich, and when we get back, let's talk about some of the work you've done, some of the work on your site, especially the war against us all, because I think that's really important. So stay with us. Rich and I will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Tragedy and Hope with my excellent guest and friend, Richard Grove. If you're not familiar with Richard's work, please get over to tragedyandhope.com. The Peace Revolution, is that thepeacerevolution.org, Richard?
Yeah, it's peacerevolution.org, or you can just go to tragedyandhope.com and look under audio, and then it's got individual postings that mirror that site.
Right, and yeah, I'm glad I remember most of your sites, because when people ask me stupid questions that they should know on social media, I just flip them over to your site. I'm like, okay, this guy already did the work on it. Here's the link. Go do your homework. You know, and that's another thing I find is that people want instant answers because they don't want to do the homework themselves.
I try to discourage that to some extent. I mean, my hope is you're listening or watching something I've produced and a question comes to mind and you don't really want to just search Google or you know, just throw it out there. But, you know, if I'm talking about it, I've put it in my history blueprint. You could just search it in there, and then you click all the attachments and start reading. Most of what I know comes from reading and interacting with the world and seeing how what I think, you know, interacts with what I, you know, what exists, and you learn from that process. Like at one point, I'm sure I thought George Washington chopped down the cherry tree and, you know, he never told a lie and all that good stuff. And then you read a little bit more. I've come to the point where it's like I just take knowledge as a very, very low bar because I'm learning so much every day. It's like if I knew everything yesterday, how could I be learning so much today? So let your ego take the hit. You don't really know a whole lot until you start looking into these subjects because, you know, on any given topic that I cover in a podcast, there was a point where I knew I could maybe summarize it in one sentence, but my knowledge didn't go deeper than that because where would I get the knowledge if I hadn't gone out and looked at these things and had the experience and tracked them down? So I'm trying to invite people to participate in a very similar experience that I'm doing for myself. And you get part of that through listening or watching, but you really get into it when you get a couple links down, you know, deep in a search that where you're trying to answer your own question based on something that I presented and that you started thinking about. And now you're off on your own learning path. And that can happen many, many times through any one of my episodes because I provide the links and notes and references, and it's just, you know, one click away. While you're listening, click open in new tab and start reading.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think today they just seem to be deliberately discouraging young people from reading. I've always seen the introduction of Kindle and e-books as a bad thing. It might be convenient, but it might not be convenient if we have no electricity and your little gadgets don't work. Then what happens? And I know you've read so many books. I wanted to ask you this just out of curiosity for myself. You have done so much work. I mean, some of your podcasts are like 12, 18 hours long. I can't even imagine how much work you have to do to put together something like that. You've had that great series you did with John Taylor Gatto. You know, all your work is great, you know, but out of everything you've ever read, was there one book out of all of them that really woke you up or really caught your eye or that you would say was the most important?
Well, I'd say the most critical of the path I've found, because, you know, you do read a lot of books and you're like, this has nothing to do with anything that matters. I read a book in 2004 called Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time. And even though it's a really big, thick, you know, just monumental work of history, it's not the most interesting and, you know, book to read because it's supposed to be it's an academic, factual, historical document to be used to groom people like the, you know, CIA heads overseas. It's like, here's the secret history of what's going on separate from what they tell the public. And Carol Quigley, who wrote it, was a professor at Georgetown for the Foreign Service Department. And he had access to something called the Council on Foreign Relations and these other groups' records for like 20 years to write this book. So there are a few passages in there where it's really enlightening. I think it's page 50 or 52 where he talks about this family called the Rothschild banking family. And it's like, I went through 5 years of college. I had a lot of economics classes and things like that. Never heard of them. Must not exist. They must have died off or whatever. No, they're still in control. It's just because they're in control, you don't really find out about them in a standard education. Or on page 960, you know, he goes off on, yeah, there's this group that works with the communists and the capitalists, and it manipulates both sides, and they're seeking global governance and to remove the will of the individuals. It's like those are pretty breathtaking, but is it just this one guy who wrote this, or is there more information to be found? And then you bump into an author like Anthony Sutton, who I'd put right up there with Quigley, because the books he published cover a wide spectrum describing the tyranny and despotism we're experiencing today. But those are very highfalutin academic books, and you really got to pay attention and study to get what, you know, the value out of those books. Come today, you've got a book like Tragedy and Hope 101, The Illusion of Freedom, Justice, and Democracy by Joe Plummer. It's available free online. You can get it from Amazon if you want the hardcover. I did an interview with him, so you can go watch it and see why you'd want to get the book. But it basically is a Cliff Notes version of all the New World Order history as presented through the lens of, here was Cecil Rhodes. He left this will to create a secret society to get America back into the British Empire. That created the CFR and the United Nations and all these other World Bank, IMF, all these different things that we see today as part of globalism. And that's what we're fighting. The New World Order is globalism or internationalism. It's the loss of sovereignty to nation states, which means individuals don't have local accountability. And the difference between the Old World Order, which was British territorialism, and the New World Order, which is the Anglo-American commercial state, these transnational, international, multinational companies that exercise the rights as human beings but aren't.
Exactly. Well, that's a good list. And I would have to say, listening to you, if you remember the pages in that book, that's probably the book, Tragedy and Hope. I remember a lot of books I've read, but I couldn't tell you what's on any specific page in any specific book. But, you know, lately I've been reading from writers that I have some respect for. You know, I really like WSWS.org. And John Pilger, Paul Craig Roberts, everybody pointing to this election being the beginning of World War III, talking about how we're circling and pushing against Russia, against China, how they totally can outarm us. They have better arms than we have. And that it seems to be typically a part of history that when the world economy is in the toilet, a world war breaks out. Now, you've studied history way more than I have. Well, would you agree with that synopsis?
I think the shortage of money comes from a desire for the war itself. So it would be like drying out your garden because you want to burn it. So when you see the economies start dipping down, that's a preparatory phase historically for war, which historically goes in and builds the general facilities so that corporations can go in and extract wealth and minerals from that geographical area. And for at least the past 200 years, that's pretty much what it's about. In the modern form, you've got the military as a front for all these multinational companies, and it's no different than it was in Smedley Butler's time of the 1930s when he said war was a racket. And he identified, this is, you know, hindsight for him because he doesn't do it, he doesn't speak out while he was in the service, but he won the Congressional Medal of Honor twice, speaking of Memorial Day. And here's what the guy had to say. He said that he was used as a dupe to go in and do all the dirty work for a bunch of American and British corporations that wanted to undermine these various parts of the world. And he fought all over the world, from the Philippines to Central America to, I think, World War I. So nothing's changed in that aspect in the past 100 years.
Right. Was he the one that also said all wars, the bankers' wars?
Yeah, and basically the bankers had tried to have a coup in 1935. It was called the Business Plot, and it was going to overthrow FDR, and these were basically people who were the same people who were funding Hitler. So you've got like the Bush family back then involved. But this is a coup that didn't go well because this guy named Jerry Maguire, who was a Wall Street banker, went to Smedley Butler and he said, hey, we want you to lead, you know, whatever, 500,000 men. It was some huge number of troops that they had, on their payroll or willing to go to the defense of that cause. And Butler took it to Congress. So you can look up in the history blueprint, the McCormick-Dickstein Committee or Smedley Butler or any of the things that I just said, and you can start to read from there. You know, it's like, I let you know there's something there that you might be interested in. Now it's your job to go check it out, if you so choose. Nobody's forced to do anything.
Exactly. Well, I always put in, like somebody was talking about George Clooney, who threw that super expensive dinner for Hillary Clinton. And a week later, it couldn't have been, it seemed like a week or two later, he gets accepted in the CFR. So when somebody posted it, I just put CFR, Google it. Now, I don't know how many people will actually do that, you know, but it's so, they're so blatantly out in your face. But if people don't know the background structure of how this is set up, it means nothing to them.
Well, and I think Clooney's old enough, he's been around to know how that background structure is set up. So him in the CFR is him saying he supports the internationalist legacy of Cecil Rhodes to bring America back into the British Empire because those are the people that butter that guy's bread. Personally, I don't think of George Clooney. I don't have any respect for him. He pretends for a living. Great. Nice, nice. But so do the people on Romper Room and Channel 13, you know, Sesame Street. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about reality that affects people's lives. And when he goes out there, spends a bunch of money in the absence of actually knowing something about the subject, I don't admire that. But I have no ill will for him because what good would that do me? You know, I don't think of him.
I know. I'm like, okay, you're an actor. Why don't you, like, stick to what you know and just shut up? I noticed you had something new going on Tragedy and Hope, something you call Casual Cafe. What's that about?
Well, Casual Cafe isn't new. In fact, that's a series that I discontinued in favor of doing The Deep End, which has both public episodes and some episodes that are subscribers only. I did The Casual Cafe from 2009 through, like, 2014, 2015. And so what that would be is an informal, unplanned show where it's just me and some people either on Skype or here in the office, and we'd have a conversation. And that way it would be like something fun I could do that expresses some of what I've learned without the additional, you know, organization and all the other things that go into composing something that I release publicly. So it's more of a behind the scenes. Like if you're all set with what I have publicly, then it's not for you. But if you see the things I release publicly and you're like, I'd like to know more. How do they do this? Or, you know, what goes on with that? Or, you know, how did the visit with John Taylor Gatto go? You know, things that I didn't think necessarily were, publishable because, you know, I'm trying to protect John's privacy to some extent. You know, he enjoys sharing with the subscribers because they've donated to him to help, you know, keep up his health and whatnot. But I'm sure there are situations where he's like, yeah, I don't want that out there publicly. That's for your subscribers. So,
right. And I agree. I totally agree with that. You had a series you worked on, The War Against Us All.
That was
what do you see it, War Against Us All? Everything we've been talking about up to this point?
Well, I published that in 2007. So that was a movie, my first movie. It was in two parts, so it might be like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 hours long. My first films, I didn't have a camera, so basically what I was doing was learning about topics, finding the critical pieces of testimony or video that illustrated that, and then cutting that together to tell a story. And I think my first, I don't know, 3 or 4 films were like that, and then I actually got enough support where I could get a camera. And those are they show the beginner's path. You know, that's where I was 10 years ago for most of those films. And it's still relevant today. All the stuff that I put in there is still going on today, the Iraq War, 9/11, the secret government. I just know about it in such greater detail today, whereas back then it's more, you know, here's a sketch of the structure, whereas today I'm like, I can tell you how all the brick and mortar and wiring and conduits and plumbing and everything in that building work, you know. If the building is a metaphor of the knowledge you build, as opposed to the metaphor that leads to the official story of 9/11, which is a myth.
Absolutely, beyond the myth. Anybody in this day and age can still believe it. But you know what? I'm sure you remember. I said it immediately after 9/11. I said 9/11 happened, and we all got convicted. And you look at the world today, post 9/11, and it's unrecognizable. Especially America, to what it was before 9/11.
Well, it's been done in the name of national security. It's done in the name of national security, and I just showed the recently released podcast, episode 92 of The Peace Revolution, that national security is code for drug and heroin smuggling and covert activities and arms support of those activities. And when you look at it through a lens of reality, you see that Osama bin Laden was most likely a heroin drug smuggling kingpin, that the people that are blamed for the, you know, hijackings that they couldn't have committed on their own without NATO help, those guys are probably just drug couriers who are learning how to deliver cocaine to places. You know, when you look at it through the non-propagandized lens, you're like, wait, these facts do not add up to the Philip Zelikow 9/11 Commission report.
What do you think about Saudi Arabia saying that the United States did 9/11, that it was an inside job?
I think the Saudis are all ready to just throw it out there. What you can see through the history is that the British intelligence and the British Empire groomed and created Saudi Arabia and has controlled it, for the past 100 and some years. During that process, MI6 agent, St. John Philby, groomed the Saudi royal family, and he converted to Islam. He moved in with them. He took a Muslim wife. He was the chief advisor to King Saud. And so you have that set up. And then his son, Kim Philby, sells the Arab Nazis, as they're called, the Arab fascists that are the Wahhabists, to Alan Dulles of the CIA. And then that's what gets groomed into Mujahideen and things like this. But when you see Western intelligence grooming the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda and Mujahideen and ISIS and arming them and setting them in motion, you realize, oh, that's just a useful proxy. So Britain wants to do something, but they can't do it for geopolitical strategy reasons. So they have Al-Qaeda do it. What is Al-Qaeda? Well, Al-Qaeda, you know, the whole base for that is in the Saudi kingdom with Saudi money. And where do a lot of the Saudis are getting? So anyway, that's why the 28 pages are left out of the report, because it discloses British intelligence and their role in manipulating the oil and the Saudi power that it has in the first place.
Right. So do you think this is blowback from the Saudis?
Well, I think their threat, you know, that they're going to dump the U.S. bonds, or they're going to say that America did 9/11. I think that they're probably just tired of being jerked around, because they've been under control. They've been on the leash, basically, of Western intelligence, MI6 and CIA. And I think at some point they're jerking back. You know, but well, what's going to come out should have been known since 9/11. That the people that attacked us are not some, you know, group that we're not connected to on the other side of the planet. It's people in three-piece suits on Wall Street working with arms dealers, working with drug dealers, and they're all above the law.
Well, that's easy to say. I mean, you know, there's been so much blowback in history. I guess people get pushed enough, but you and I both remember that, and anybody can look it up, that they told us immediately that 14 of the supposed 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. But we never touched Saudi Arabia. We hit two innocent countries.
Well, and if Osama bin Laden was really behind it, would they have flown his whole family out of the country under national security?
I remember that. They were the only people allowed to fly.
And I think it's because there's too many contradictions about 9/11 that it's just so easy for people to just take the official story, because they're like, oh, here's something that makes sense, as long as you don't think about anything outside that story.
Exactly. But somebody had posted a picture with that. I don't know, what did it take, 10 seconds for one of the buildings to collapse? And the guy posted it with something very sensible. He says, you can't even clap your hands together 10 times in 10 seconds. And yet we're supposed to believe that building came down in 10 seconds.
Well, I think it's just important for people when they're trying to conceptualize that, because they saw it on TV, so it must have just happened like you were told. Okay. But when you try to conceptualize, it's like, you're talking about 220 square acres of concrete being turned into some sort of dust in less than a few seconds.
Right, by an airplane that disappeared inside the building.
Yeah, there's a lot more energy being used than can be accounted for from the cause.
Right. Well, I for one can say I'm really glad you were late for work that day, Richard.
Yeah, well, that was the beginning of a rough learning curve. I mean, being present when there's an act of terrorism being perpetrated on America, that's bad enough. And then to find out the people who are actually blowing up those buildings and killing those people are people that are, you know, not from outside this country. They're people with big, fat insurance plans, and two events, you know, equals two payouts and this sort of thing. It's like you're talking about very cunning and ruthless people. And that, you know, like I said, that was off my radar at that point. I didn't study much history. I mean, who does? Until they have a need to, I guess. Unless you have an interest in it or have a need to learn it, most people don't. They just think they know. They take a lot of assumptions for granted, and they just, you know, go through life trying to, you know, monkey see, monkey do.
All right. Well, I can tell you this. If ever there was a time in human history that people need to learn history and to take that interest, now is the time. Rich, well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to doing this with you at least every other month. And I also want to say to people, and you included, of course, don't forget to take time out to enjoy your lives. Okay, we're also here to have a happy life and enjoy our lives, enjoy your family, enjoy your children, and enjoy your friends. But at the same time, those are reasons you have to learn and you have to fight for what we're losing very rapidly.
I think it's just important to keep it in balance because, you know, you don't have much to enjoy if you don't do the work of defending liberty and freedom, even in the small quantities that we have today. It's like if you don't look into it now, you might not be allowed to look into it in the future. Or they might just see that you're searching for X, Y, and Z, and they put people in prison. That's what they did in Russia. And the people we're talking about today are much more cunning and technologically adept than the Soviets were. So thanks for inviting me back on, Maria. I appreciate
it. So happy to get to talk to you again and kiss that little baby for me.
I will. It's been a busy couple months, but I should have time every other month from now on.
Okay, great. You take care, Rich.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.
Richard Grove, check out his work.